Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We have a special edition today. It's the first ever mixed episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. whereas normally I'm joined by myself, JR, Miles, and Yinka.
Yeah, we decided to mix it up
a little bit today. Yeah, Miles usually fills the quota for us, but he's not here. So to get things leveled back out, we've gone and brought in a couple ringers, a couple heavy hitters from Vikings Twitter to help us out this evening. We got Mr. BJ Rydell. What's going on, BJ?
Jason, a pleasure. Happy to be here. Happy to see you in the flesh.
And we got the man, the myth, the legend, the Hoodie. What's going on, Hoodie?
Jason, it's wonderful to be here. I appreciate the thought of being a heavy hitter. Deep down, we know I was about the 18th on the list, but yet again, I'd still rather be 18th. So thanks again.
There we go. And as always, the versatile, the mobile, Mr. Sachi Prince. What's going on, my man?
The not hostile, though. Yeah. So, what's going on, y'all?
Well, tonight, where we're recording, we brought these guests in for a special reason. Obviously, some things happened on Friday in the land of Vikings, where Mr. Floyd, right before he was supposed to be done with his house arrest and all the rest, ended up in the news. TMZ reported that he failed multiple alcohol tests back on June 11th between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning. I think five failed, one missed. And obviously that sent Vikings Twitter into an uproar. I spent way too much of my Friday afternoon reading about kombucha tea. And since BJ had an exclusive interview with Mr. Michael Floyd not very long ago, in which we talked about redemption and things along those lines, figured BJ would be the perfect person to come on and give his take on the Floyd situation and kind of where he expects things to go from here. BJ, the floor is yours.
You know, I feel like my take's not going to be as strong as you might think it would be. The first thing here is that it's not set in stone just yet that Mike made this mistake, his egregious error after signing this redemption contract. It is still up in the air. I don't remember the name of the tea, maybe you do, that that he reportedly was drinking that caused the positive test. So I am still hopeful in that regard. But, you know, at the same time, it's disappointing, I guess. It's probably the simplest way to put it, for sure, especially after I talked to him. You know, this is a guy that I'm not going to act like I'm best buddies with him, but this is a guy that I felt like I knew pretty well, and I felt like I knew who I was talking to. And, if that's the case, and really he did just make this mistake, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after signing this deal, that this redemption contract, like I said in that article, it's really disappointing. And that's, I guess, it's the best way I can put it. It's just that it's disappointing, and I really hope that there is some sort of caveat here that we're missing.
Yeah, and I think that, I'm not going to lie. We joke around about a lot of things on Twitter pretty much nonstop all the time. But just, you know, the initial way that your folks reacted to this whole situation made me a little uncomfortable. So I, for the most part, sat out a lot of kind of the back and forth that were going on with it, because it's either a really sad situation just based on how close to kind of the other side of the house arrest and all the rest, and you know, with him being back home and seeking redemption and everything else. And then there is still just so much that is unknown, from my perspective anyway, where I just have questions with, you know, I guess he has a monitoring bracelet that he wears that went off at 5:30 in the morning. So I'm just wondering, like, did he wake up and start shotgunning beers at 5 o'clock in the morning to cause the failed test? Like, I just have questions if he's wearing this bracelet all the time, that how did he fail a test at 5:30 but not at 4:30, and just different things like that. So I've sat it out just because I don't really understand enough about what's going on to really have a hot take. And if it is that, you know, he relapsed, I personally don't think it's something that I should be joking about, because it's not really funny. It's more sad to me than anything else. But I know, Yank, I mean, we've had a little bit of back and forth. I guess, did you have any thoughts or takes on kind of where we are and what you expect to happen with the Floyd situation?
Honestly, I think it's all going to boil down to what happens June 24th, I think the date is. I think the Vikings are definitely playing it very close, close to their chest. I think they might have an idea of what's going to happen. So, I mean, whether Floyd's going to get released or not is probably already known to both Floyd and the Vikings at this point. But obviously they're not making any moves because they don't have to. You know, they don't stand anything to lose by keeping him on the roster, and they don't stand anything to lose by letting him go immediately. I think they're trying to be as, hey, we took a gamble on this guy, it didn't work out, but this is sometimes why we like bringing in high character guys. That's one way they can spin it. So I think you should look for them to have more say on the situation in a few weeks' time.
And BJ, maybe in a week, actually. You wanted to jump back in on?
No, I was just going to say, I kind of was echoing your point on, Jason's point. I mean, echoing his point on just if this is something that you probably don't want to have a hot take on, right? I don't believe that, it's fair to judge the emotional characteristics of a player. It's one thing if you're judging their on-field performance, which we do vehemently all over Twitter every single day, regularly. I've got no problem with that. But as soon as you start judging some guy on an emotional level or something in their personal life, I just think that's unfair. That's for me. That's why I stay out of this type of stuff, especially with Mike being, a guy that I went to high school with. And just it's not something that – it's not my business, you know what I'm saying? So I try to stay off of it on that level. And for that reason, that's kind of why I don't have a very, hot take here. I obviously hope this Mike Floyd situation it turns around, like something happens here where new information is presented that keeps him with the Vikings, because I really do believe that he could be a great asset to this team if he just can kind of – get his stuff together. But I don't have an answer if there is something going on, if he does have alcoholism, if there is something going on in his life that, I'm not here to judge him on that. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. And that's kind of why I take the personal takes, the personal shots at guys like Mike or guys like Martavis Bryant or Josh Gordon, pick your poison. I'm not a fan of that stuff. So, it's disappointing. It's sad. But at the same time, I don't have a true spin here because I want to collect all the facts before I have a take on it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess I have a question for everyone. Is this like a regular thing and I'm just kind of out on my own here and not having any idea about this kombucha tea stuff and the fact that it actually has?
I've never heard of it before either. So
I dated a girl who was very, very into drinking kombucha. And I mean, I usually don't like to drink things that I can't spell. So I was just like, she offered it to me. I was just like, you know what? No, that's all you. But a lot of the, I guess, hipstery, like kind of like, whether it be like vegan people who drink these kinds of things. Yeah, it's hugely popular with them. And I learned about it, probably a year or two ago or so, whenever it was, but.
So you were dating a girl who popular with Whole Foods, basically?
Yeah, she tried to do the whole Whole Foods, and I just like, do they have a bacon section or something that they can point me to? Okay. That's what I was going to do. But anyways, yeah.
So it's not just me, then?
No, it's probably not.
Okay. Listen, do you want to shine some light on this? It was a completely foreign substance, which doesn't sound great in its terminology itself, but I've never heard of this stuff before at all.
All right, well,
it's fermented. I believe it's fermented for like a while.
It sounds like a Jamba Juice thing to me.
It's still alive. No, I'm not kidding. On Friday afternoon, I spent a couple hours just going through articles about kombucha tea, and like, it's actually like living fermenting stuff that people. It's like live, it's still fermenting. It's like basically rotting stuff that people are putting into their digestive tract because they think it boosts health, etc. But there are some instances in which, because the market isn't particularly well regulated, that there have been instances where people have actually tested it, and the alcohol content in kombucha tea that's on the shelf somewhere might be higher than what you find in wine. So, I mean, I don't
know. Maybe there's something there.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the defense that Floyd and his team are going to go with, but it isn't a particularly well-regulated market from what I was able to read, and there have been instances that it's stored incorrectly, and the alcohol content can't spike because even as it's on the shelves, it's still fermenting while it's sitting there because of the process that they use to create it. So, I mean, even if he does go with that story, I know that Hoodie has a different take on kind of that and the tea, and just given the fact that there is, you know, alcohol, or even the chance that there potentially could be alcohol in it. And Hoodie, you went on a very insightful, I guess we'll call it a rant on Twitter, but it was a fairly insightful thread that kind of outlined your thoughts on the Floyd situation from a different perspective. So I'm not going to steal too much of your thunder. I guess if you could kind of lay out the premise of your position and your thoughts on this, and then you know, we can react as we see fit from there.
Sure, Jason, and I appreciate it. And this is a perspective coming from someone who is a recovering alcoholic, as I am. And I have a little over 13 and a half years of sobriety, and I'm blessed to be doing that one day at a time. And I would say to you that getting sober was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life. And it literally almost killed me to do it. And it was extremely difficult. And when I hear what happened with Michael Floyd, it hit home in a very personal way. The first thing I heard, and I heard the excuse that whatever that stuff is, I think about him as like, with one of my alcoholics I would sponsor. And I've sponsored quite a few, and I've had most of them relapse. And and when I hear that excuse, it hit home because I've heard these excuses before. And the first thing that came to my mind, and please excuse my language, but you can't bullshit a bullshitter. And because I've heard these excuses before why someone went back out drinking. And that's what I heard when I heard the whole thing with Michael Floyd, and it hurts. And I'm not, this is no longer about Michael Floyd, the wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings, because we're past that. Okay. This is about Michael Floyd, the alcoholic, and Michael Floyd, the human being that people need to focus on now more than anything. Michael Floyd has a disease. He has a addiction. And it is a very difficult addiction. And, you know, this is a young man in his 20s who is struggling with this addiction. And I can tell you from being in the rooms of AA that young people, whether they're in teens or in their 20s, they have a real struggle. It's like the rest of us, but especially younger people have a struggle because their pride and ego is much stronger. And especially someone who has money, who has always been, probably he has a lot of pride and ego. I know he has a lot of pride and ego, and he probably thinks that he would be able to take care of this. And I feel pretty confident that, you know, when he came to Minnesota, he was given a lot of leeways, and I mean, he was given a lot of opportunities, as you know, as did I. When I tried to stop drinking before I actually did. But I remember when I got sober, so this is my last year of drinking. I remember that I was told I got to stop drinking. And so I went to, instead of drinking like alcohol and beer, I went to non-alcoholic beer. I think O'Doul's, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'll just do O'Doul's because, you know, it doesn't have that much alcohol in it. But it eventually led me back to alcohol. And I could see that whole thing with it. So when he was talking about the drink, I'm like, no, it's the same situation I went through. It's still going to, I mean, when I got sober, the first thing my sponsor told me was never drink anything that has any type of alcohol in it, and never eat any food that might have alcohol in it, because it could help trigger relapse. And I was terrified of finding items that way. So, I mean, beer battered fish, anything with beer batter, anything with wine in it, any of that stuff, even like drinks, I never touched that. And you know, that's stuff that it wasn't just my sponsor told me, but others. So when I heard the whole Michael Floyd situation, I thought, this doesn't, you know, this doesn't add up. So it's disheartening to hear this. It hurts in a personal way. It hurts because he's a brother to me, because he is an alcoholic, and it hurts to see someone who has the same addiction as I do struggle with that addiction, especially someone that young and has a lot to offer. And he still does. So I to be honest, I, at this point, do I think he's got a career with the Vikings? No, I don't. Do I think he's probably going to go back to Arizona and go to jail? I think he will. And do I think that's the worst thing that could happen to him? I don't. In a lot of situations, we as alcoholics have to hit our rock bottom before we can go forward. And maybe if this were to happen to Michael, to hit his rock bottom, he might think it's terrible, but in essence, it might be the best thing that might happen to him, because it might actually have a way of helping him finally deal with what he has to. And in if this were my sponsee, if I am sponsoring him, I would tell him that the last thing that should be on your mind is football. The absolute last thing on your mind. The first thing that should be on his mind, his priority, is getting sober and then becoming getting sober, working the program, working the 12 steps, and then most importantly, getting to a place where he's going to be okay with himself, making his amends, do the step work, make his amends, get okay. And then when he's at that point, then you can start focusing on his football career. And he's still young enough. If he took a year off, I think he has the opportunity of still being a productive wide receiver in the NFL. But right now, he is in no place physically, emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically to be a positive influence, whether it's on the field or off the field at the moment. And it does. And I see the wide receiver from Cleveland. I lost
Josh Gordon.
Thank you. Josh Gordon, same situation. I mean, he's pretty much in the same boat. I mean, didn't have maybe a notch below, but gosh, I mean, they're in the same boat. I mean, let me rephrase that. We are in the same boat, because we still, mm-hmm. we all deal with that. And to see, again, it hurts to see one of my brothers just not get it. And I hope he does. I pray and I can honestly say I love the man, because I do, because I know what he's going through. I know the afflictions and I know what the heart or the pain and such, but I hope he has realized, yeah, he screwed up, and he really, I mean, that Kyle Rudolph was willing to allow him to stay at his house, and he broke his trust. You know, he did break Kyle Rudolph's trust, because he did what he did. And the Vikings, you know, kind of bent over backwards for him too and did that. And they knew that there's probably gonna be some suspension time. Doesn't matter. They still believed in him. They wanted to do that. And you know, it's tough seeing that. It really is. Real quick.
So from your perspective with him, because I know that, you know, we kind of messaged back and forth a little bit in a DM there. Do you view, I guess, him getting the concessions that he was given and being able to kind of get some, maybe I guess we'll say privileges that others might not have afforded to them, to have his house arrest moved and you know, getting the bracelet taken off so that he could practice, et cetera, et cetera. Do you view those as potentially kind of, you know, a negative or enabling type things that maybe allowed him to not view the situation with this, with an appropriate amount of severity, or do you just think that, you know, ego messed it up?
I would say it depends, because I have seen people in the program of AA who have had, when they worked the steps, they had their either sentences reduced or they're taken off probation, or, you know, when they worked the program and did the step work, I have seen positive results from people doing that. So no, I think more than anything else, it depends. I think more than anything, it wasn't if it enabled him or not. I think it's a fact of where he was. I mean, when he came to Minnesota, did he, you know, the questions are going to be, was he in the program of AA? If he was he going to meetings every day like you should, 30 meetings in 30 days? Was he finding a sponsor? who, you know, it's his responsibility. You know, the whole saying we have in A is like, you can lead a horse to water, but he can still get drunk if he wants. And that's how we, and but it's true, because you can do everything for that person, but if they still want to go out and drink, they'll do it. They'll find a way. And I hear that. And when I heard, you know, failing tests, it doesn't surprise me, because I've, in the rooms of AA, I've heard stories where people, they'll hide beer, like whiskey or liquor bottles, like underneath their bed, under their mattresses, in shoes, whatever. The people find ways of getting, if they are desperate enough to find and get to go that far for alcohol, they'll do it. And I just, I know that he had that excuse, but man, I would just, I just, it's frustrating that I want to know, like, where he stood, like, was he doing this, like, was he doing the right steps when he got here? And it, to me, it sounds like he wasn't. And I don't think he had it in place. I think he had a good system around him. Like, I think people were trying to help, but did he have a system for himself where he could say, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this? I think he failed himself on that.
And I guess the last kind of question I have specific to this would be, put us inside the mind of, I guess, you know, an alcoholic in this situation, where most people are looking at this saying, well, there's no way he would have knowingly done this with 5 days left on his, you know, house arrest, home confinement. Like, he'd gone through, passed 500 tests. There's no way that he would do something like this to put himself at risk so close to the end of it all. Help us understand how that all works. Because, I mean, yeah, it doesn't seem to make sense that after going that far along in the program that you would risk it all on a Sunday morning.
Addiction is a bitch, and there's no ifs, ands about it. And I've done that, where I can honestly tell you, as a person who I have – driven drunk dozens of times in my life, where I have drove home from 40 miles away in a snowstorm, passed out at the wheel, slid into a ditch, got back out, should have been dead, but I still went and drank the next day. You got to have that drink. It consumes you to have that. It makes you feel better. So, well, in your mind, it makes you feel better. Okay. And you have to have it. So you will go to great lengths to get that. And it doesn't matter what rewards are waiting for you. If you are not doing what you're doing to protect yourself, to make yourself better, to stop this addiction, you're going to do it. And it's so difficult to explain. You know, in AA, we have a thing that we say that we're wired different from normal people. And it's true. And we are wired different. And you can try to tell somebody how an addiction works, or, you know, how an alcoholism works. If they're not an addict, or if they're not, you know, working a program or whatever, it's difficult for, I guess, a quote unquote, a normal human being to understand that. And it's true. And I've, you know, my family still doesn't understand. Like, they know that I have something bad, and, you know, like, I've had addiction, what my, you know, what addiction does, what it's seen, they've seen it firsthand. They still don't get, you know, why do you do that? And I'm like, and I tell them, like, it just do. And it's so hard and so frustrating to explain, like, the shit I did. And they're like, well, why did you do it? Because I could, you know, why would you ditch out on, like, I was so desperate, like, for me, like, I was so desperate to get drunk that I had an expired credit card in my wallet, and I went to the bar and rang up a $75 bar tab just because I wanted to get drunk, and I just left, because, you know, they take your credit card, and I just left. And now I'm grateful enough that I was able to, you know, make amends, repay them years later. But still, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. You just, you're so wired that you just got to have it so you can feel better. You would go to great lengths. You'll go to any length, no matter what the circumstances are. It has, you know, alcoholism ruins our marriages, relationships with your children, relationships with your family, relationships with people around your work, relationships, friends. It's horrible. And it isn't just like about getting drunk. It's about also the lying, about not finishing commitments, having people not trust you. So it's more than just about alcoholism. It's about it's the bigger effects that about alcoholism itself. So, yeah, I that's all I could probably the best way to explain why he did what he did, because you just don't, unless you're an actual addict or an alcoholic, it's really tough to explain, but we're just so wired differently about it, and it's horrible. Like, obviously I'm grateful now for being sober and that I can talk about my prior experiences of all the harm I've done, and that, cause I've made amends, but it doesn't mean that I feel any better about it. And I know right now Michael Floyd probably feels about an inch tall and hates himself, and he probably wish he could take a baseball bat to himself right now because he screwed up his chances. But his life's not over, and he has an opportunity still. Once he deals with whatever stuff, he can start again. Like, he can stop at any time. Like, he can start being sober again at any time, which is the great thing about it. But it gets harder and harder each and every time that he goes back out.
And, well, that is awesome perspective. Thank you very much for sharing that. I guess BJ, Yenka, anything that you wanted to add or throw in there?
I mean, like he said, it's difficult to have the perspective if you're not in that select crew. It's just something I personally feel a little bit different. I have a tough time talking about this kind of thing because it's not something that affects me personally. And for that reason, I just, there's no reason to be disrespectful for no reason. So I guess I'll leave it at that. I think Hoodie did a great job of explaining from vantage point that we're probably looking at with Mike here. That's about as good as you can get from someone that's experienced it before.
Yeah, and just to chime in, I think BJ, you had mentioned it, put it kind of the best way. I think this is why it's so important as fans to kind of step away and just understand that, underneath the uniform, the helmet, the pads, all that stuff is a human being. And I know sometimes with all the memes and GIFs that exist out there, it's just so easy to take shots at these people. And I do say people because that's what they are first versus just looking at them as players. So I think it is important that we just kind of just always just take a step back and just understand, like, hey, these players go through things like addiction and depression and PTSD and all manner of things that, we sometimes can't see because we want the W column to have double digits, So I think Cody put it the best way, and he put it in a way that maybe none of us can articulate as accurately as he did. So yeah, I appreciate you speaking out on it, Hoodie, and yeah, it's really all my only take on it.
And real quick, actually, and I know that he's probably not listening, but if Mike Floyd ever gets hold of this, I hope he understands and knows that if he just wants to talk at any time, if he needs someone to talk to about this, I'm here. And there are other people on Vikings Twitter who are recovering alcoholics as well. But if he just feels like he just needs to talk to somebody, I won't judge him at all. And if he just needs to just, hear from another alcoholic, I'm here for him. I'll treat him like I do with any sponsee. I'll be tough. I will tell him like it is. But I'm here, like I'm praying for him, but I'm also here for him. And if he just needs someone to talk to right now, and I know his pride and ego is probably, if he's anything like mine, he'll probably, probably not, but I'm here though. And if he ever needs to talk, even if it's just on for whatever reason, if he just needs to vent or do whatever he wants to, if he needs help, I'm here to help.
That's awesome. Well, I don't know that any of us are going to be able to say anything that hasn't already been said. I think Hoodie did it about as well as it possibly can be done. So, I guess that's pretty much it. BJ, Hoodie, thanks for coming out and helping us out here, getting us back to a foursome with JR and Miles going missing, and record the end of the episode so y'all can get back to, I guess, whatever it was you guys were doing with your Sunday evening before we interrupted it.
One last thing, team sleeves, number one.
No, definitely not an interruption, guys. I appreciate you having me on here. Always
thanks for coming on.
And like I said, nice to put a face to name with both of you guys. So hope to be back, and we'll talk some more fights soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Peace, gentlemen.
See ya.
See ya.
All right. Well, that was a really insightful and a very real conversation. Probably the realest talk that we've had on the Climbing the Pocket podcast so far. And I think that before we wrap the show, Yank, I wanted to just come back to something that you touched on there towards the end, where you're saying, I think we often can get caught up in, you know, our fandom and sometimes forget that these guys are actual people and not just kind of trained entertainers or whatever out there for our amusement. And I think that's a good segue, because it gets us back to an issue that we touched on really briefly in a previous pod that came up again this weekend with the Colin Kaepernick situation and him not having a job, and him speaking out on the verdict, and, you know, obviously, which is a hot button issue in Minnesota right now. And basically another former player asking him to stop talking about this issue. I guess, what are your thoughts on all of that? I guess you're in Minnesota. Help me understand what the mood is up there and how people are reacting to the verdict. And then, I guess, what are your thoughts on, again, you know, the whole stick to sports and this notion that, I guess, athletes should just shut up and play and entertain us and keep their real life stuff away from our entertainment?
I guess to address the stick to sports things, I think that's it's problematic for quite a few reasons, obviously. I think as human beings, yeah, we have our professions, we have the things that we do, but there's so many other things that we enjoy and we spend so much of our time investing in, you know, whether it be our hobbies or whether it be just like some kind of, you know, other activity that you like to do. And people spend a lot of time either training in these areas, studying in these areas, researching, all that stuff. So I think the stick to sports mantra is only a way to, it's like, it's a divisive device in a way to stop someone from making them feel uncomfortable about it. But I guess more importantly, as far as this, you know, if we talk about Colin Kaepernick, Philando Castile, all that stuff, something I will often say about criticism is criticism without solutions is just judgment. And I think a lot of people, they're very quick to understand or maybe put forth their feelings on, well, I just don't like this because it makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't like it because I disagree with it. And that's fine. That is your right as a human being. But I think where the issue oftentimes becomes, and this is kind of what Colin Kaepernick was getting at, and a lot of, I mean, if we're speaking honestly, and in the Black community, is the question of how comes up. How are we going to fix things? How are we going to move past it? How are we going to better position ourselves to avoid tragic things like this happening? And more often than not, an answer is not given. The criticism is given, but a solution is not, which again brings it back to just judgment. And something that I, another thing that I say is, if you look at every other profession in this world, doctors who have the ability during surgery to literally kill people, politicians, presidents who have like their decisions affect literally the lives of the people that they are representing. We can criticize those professions in ways that help to improve them. And there definitely seems to be a hesitancy to to criticize law enforcement because the mentality becomes, if I criticize it, then that means I don't appreciate it. But I try to liken it to how people are with their children. You know, we criticize our children, our loved ones, not even just children, but loved ones, excuse me. We criticize our loved ones for things that we might see them that they can improve on. But that doesn't detract from me still loving them as a, you know, as someone who carries the same blood as me or someone that I really care about. And I think we should feel more okay criticizing things that we want to see improve, but at the same time, understand that criticism for one cop doesn't necessarily have to spread for criticism for all. And then also in the reverse, that criticism can also be a learning lesson for anyone else who finds themselves in that situation. Sorry, I know I'm going on the rant, but I'm just trying to get some of these takes out.
Nah, man, keep it going.
Yeah. So I think there's one thing that when we looked at all the things that happened pre-Colin Kaepernick, you know, we looked at Tamir Rice, Andrew Bland, look at Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, all these situations where we would hear, we as people, not just in the black community, I'm talking about everyone. You know, the narrative became, well, if only you only did this, if only you did this, if only you did this, if only you did this. And it got to a point where it's just like, okay, well, you guys, or the criticism, excuse me, just became an if only. It's like, okay, well, what is your solution? Solution we heard essentially was remain quiet and kind of get over it, and or protest in silence. Now enter Colin Kaepernick, who enacted that very if only. And he was, he was criticized in the most heaviest way that I've ever seen a player get criticized, sans guys who have murdered or raped people. And it kind of just showed that even silence wasn't the answer. Even silence wasn't enough to make people feel uncomfortable, make people feel comfortable enough to actually address the issues that exist in our country. So it comes to a point where, you know, we can hear the if onlys for a specific group who was either killed or they find all the reasons why someone like Philando Castillo was a reason of his own for his own death. But my thing is if you're if only isn't causing a change, maybe the if only should be redirected to maybe the people who are in that given situation. And in this instance, it would be police officers. Now, you know, I oftentimes welcome dialogue. I welcome opposing opinions and stuff. And I think, you know, a lot of people who are just like, well, you don't listen to another perspective. You don't listen to what I'm trying to say. And I think there is a level of truth to that. I think people have closed their minds to opposing perspectives. Now, I think there's a difference between having an opposing viewpoint, such as, you know, we disagree that, you know, player X is different than player, you know, Y or whatever, versus these kinds of situations where one viewpoint will continue to allow it to happen. Another perspective might find a decrease or maybe a solution to the problem. And I think the difference is if you find your opinion rooted in oppression or rooted in stagnation or complacency, then you have to evaluate if your perspective is actually a genuine perspective, or is it just some kind of internalized emotional feeling that you are putting forth as an opinion.
And I feel you on that. And I guess one of the things I do want to say, because I think when the people are coming from opposing perspectives on this, I feel like oftentimes it's genuine on both sides. And I think that's why we often get into trouble on Twitter, because you boil it down to 140 and it's very difficult to have nuanced conversation. But I know that I've had conversations about the, you know, the police violence thing, And one thing that, you know, at my job, and, you know, I don't think my boss listens to the pod, but on my teams, I encourage, we have very, very wide open dialogue about all these kinds of things. And when you start to talk to people from different backgrounds, you come to realize that their experiences are very, very different. That's something that,
yeah,
you know, the nervousness that maybe you feel when a cop car pulls in behind you is a completely foreign concept to many people. And so when they're coming from a perspective of, you know, the police have always been, you know, great to me or whatever, it's not necessarily that they are, you know, willfully out to discount your experience. It's your experience is one that is completely foreign, that they just do not know about. In a way, they're ignorant to your experience in the same way that you might be ignorant to theirs. And so,
exactly,
I guess with these sorts of things, and I understand Twitter is Twitter, and you know, the hot takes are going to get fired off, especially as it pertains to this sort of thing, I would just ask on both sides, you know, unplug and go have a conversation with somebody. Because I feel
absolutely,
like you have a conversation with someone face to face and understand that, you know, this issue, while you're firing off your takes and getting caught up and scoring points in an argument on Twitter, can be fun or whatever, but it's a really real issue to a lot of people. And the reason that it does inflame so many passions, especially for folks that look like us, is that the vast majority of us at some point have had a run-in. I know that I've been pulled out of my car wearing a suit and tie, leaving my, you know, job as a middle manager at a bank, and been pulled over on the side of the road in Cobb County back in Atlanta and had guns trained on me, and then was sent on my way without so much as a ticket, warning, anything. And that's terrifying, you know, and that's
an experience
that many don't know or see or understand. And I think that's the reason that, you know, this does inflame such passions. But I think that, as you just did a great job of right there, it's stepping back from the passion of the issue, having conversations and actually getting people to really understand the perspective of both parties is the only way that we're going to move things forward. And like you said, if all you're doing is criticizing without offering any sort of solution, then you're really not adding anything to the conversation whatsoever. So if you're standing on the sidelines saying that, you know, I guess the metaphorical sideline, saying you don't like what Colin Kaepernick did on the actual sideline, offer up a solution. Help us understand what you're going to do to make the situation better, because it doesn't do any good to say, well, obviously it's bad that unarmed people are getting killed, but you know, there can't be a but that doesn't lead to some manner of action. And I guess that's my only take on this. I guess I'll let you have the last word on this and wrap up our only, for the next little while, I think, hyper-political, non-sports related climbing the pocket. Climbing the pocket podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess you know, one of my last few points is this specifically. I know that, I mean, me specifically, I've had people kind of come into my DMs and I've had conversations with people on Twitter. I think that's why I love Twitter, because I meet so many different people who have so many different unique experiences. And then to have someone reach out to me in my inbox and say, like, Inka, I have this prejudice, I have this part of me that that exists. I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know why I feel this way. This is how I feel. And, you know, I've had conversations with those kind of people. But one thing I say is, one of the first things that I say to these people is, or anyone really, and I encourage everyone to reach out to me if you ever want to talk. But I also say that I'm not a monolith. And what I mean by that is, my standpoint on any given thing, or any one person's standpoint on any given issue, doesn't necessarily represent the whole. And, you know, I don't like to take shots at the, you know, news media that much, but I guess I will mention something like a Fox News, for instance, is I will oftentimes, I don't get encouraged when I watch Fox News, but I will still watch it for a unique perspective. But one thing that I've noticed is they oftentimes will bring on the occasional, you know, either person of color or person from an opposing viewpoint that should, or not opposing viewpoint, but someone who should have an opposing viewpoint, but they don't, and they tend to speak for the majority of that person that they claim to represent. That's something that I think we need to get away from. If you truly, truly want to understand something and you don't want to live in your bubble, Yeah, it's like you said, Jason, you got to unplug from social media, because there's still a good faction of people who post on social media and don't understand that when you put something out there on social media, more often than not, you're posting it in forum. You know, it was very calculated that they put a comment section on every single status that you put on, every single tweet that you might send out, or Instagram, all that stuff. People are allowed to disagree with you, essentially. I actually put on a status on Facebook about it, because I mean, this hit home for me. This was not too far away from actually where I live. I didn't know Flano personally, but I do know people who do know him, and they have nothing but positive things to say about him. But one thing that I wanted to mention was obviously the narrative of fearing for one's life in the profession of a police officer. These brave men and women, they do things that a lot of us can't. You know, they put on a uniform every single day, every single night, and keep us safe and whatnot. And fearing, like fear is, it's a very human emotion. it's an animal emotion, but it's definitely a very human emotion. And I guess I want to kind of break apart that narrative, because I don't want it to be encouraged that people should fear a person based off of something that they see. And I know that's it's a more complicated concept to that, because we are, it's very natural to fear something that looks, walks, talks differently than you are. I mean, if you're going from biological processes, it's just how we are sometimes ingrained. But I don't want the narrative to become, I feared for my life, so it's okay to have this irrational fear that I can continue to act on, because that's what we're seeing in a lot of different areas and whatnot. But my last take is this, and it's about, I know I'm getting really political here, which I try to stay away from doing, but it's about racism. I oftentimes will say our school systems have done a terrible job with teaching specifically about racism, because everyone has, when they think about racism, they think about slave owners, they think about the people who lynched a bunch of Black people or persons of color, people who constantly use racial slurs, all that stuff. And I think racism is not that, it's not that bland. It's not that, I guess, old or simplistic. It's evolved. It's different than it is now. I kind of liken it to myself as a male. I knew growing up that just being a male, there were blind spots that I had towards women that, you know, I might say something that I thought was funny, or, you know, I thought that they would like, but, you know, coming to realize like, hey, that stuff was in some ways offensive to them. And once I started to own it, I was able to grow from it. I tell people, being racist is not bad. Remaining racist, that's bad. And, you know, as soon as you acknowledge that, you have to understand, first and foremost, you're not a bad person, because again, there are environmental things that are in place in our society that push people to, you know, towards people that are like them. And obviously one of the most obvious things is race. You know, you surround yourself with people who look like you, and race is obviously the most obvious of them all. But if you acknowledge that there might be something that's inherently, you look at another individual and it you feel very uncomfortable with them. I've learned to start exploring some of those feelings, why I feel the way that I do or did about certain individuals, and then just going to sit down and having a conversation. But that goes back to what I said, that not just that one conversation is not an end all be all, because that person's not a monolith. they will eventually, hopefully that conversation leads to another conversation, to another conversation. So by the time you have, you know, you're on your third or fourth conversation with someone who's has a, you were so afraid of, that fear does start to retract quite a bit. So that was kind of my last take on everything. Like I said, I know it was super political on the show, but I definitely encourage everybody to seek out people who are different than them. You know, we focus on our similarities and we try to find people who are similar to us. But let's start encouraging the differences.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to wrap things up. Like you said, you know, we all came together initially because, you know, on this, for kind of bringing it back to sports a little bit, you know, we all came together because we're Vikings fans. In this case, we're all Vikings fans. We're all, you know, black men, but you know, we're all different. We all have different points of views on things. And the most important really thing, I think, from all of this as we move forward is, you know, generally speaking, this pod is going to be a light pod. We're going to, you know, joke around, share our varied viewpoints on sports related things, but we are people. And when things like this do pop up that, you know, affect, you know, us as people, as men, as black men, we are going to talk about them. We'll be recording another episode in a couple of days. Promise you on that one, things will be a little lighter than this one. We'll get back to some of the usual takes that you're used to hearing. But yeah, we aren't always going to hashtag stick to sports. Hopefully I scare everyone off on this episode because yeah, there's a lot of heavy topics, a lot of real topics that were covered on this episode this week. But there are also topics that I think they matter. They're conversations that need to be happening. They're conversations that need to happen in the open. We do them a lot. We talk about this stuff a lot in our group chats. But occasionally these are conversations that need to be had out in the open. So if you've made it along with us this far, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown, joined this week by, you know, RB4, Mr. Saxy Prince. And yeah, we'll be back soon. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything we talked about this week, shoot me a DM, shoot Yanka a DM, and we will gladly discuss any of the points brought up on this in greater detail offline. Have a good night, people.